Thanks, everyone that's joining. We'll go ahead and get started in a minute or so.
So I see the rate of participants joining is leveling off. So I think I can get started with just some general introductions. This meeting is being recorded because we're going to make it available later for other people who can't join this time slot to watch. And this is really exciting for us. This is really the conclusion, or I don't know, this is after 5 years of working on this. This is our big challenge, and we are really excited because I think we've learned a lot from the way we've done this the last times around. We have more data now. I think we have more solid tasks. I think we have a better understanding of how communicated with participants. But this is still this is the third time we're doing a prediction challenge, and I mean Pramod, who's going to take over in a second, is going to explain this a bit more. But I still consider this to be a bit of an experiment, this model of using prediction challenges to really test different computational approaches for the predictive value has been proven to be extremely successful in things like structure prediction or so. And we are trying to move this onto a much more complex field, namely vaccine outcomes. So I'm super excited to also see like a bunch of people here who I don't know, and a bunch of people who I do know from the last round. This has been exciting the last time around. It's good to see people coming back. So let's get started. And Pramod, why don't you take over, and all the credits here for much of the work go to Pramod and team, not so much for me. So please, Pramod, take it away.
Mod, you're muted.
Yeah, thanks for noticing that. Yeah, so thanks, Bjorn, for the kind introduction. Yeah, so the prediction contest is a competitive event in which individuals or group make predictions specific to outcomes based on their knowledge, expertise in the field. And this exploration of prediction contest started long back in 1990s. To bridge the gap between the structured prediction community, which is mostly experimental at that time, and with the bigger community, which was striving at that time, which is computational biology community. And that led to in past 30 years, there were around 13 different CASP, or the protein structure prediction challenges. And after this challenge, you see there are a lot of different areas in the science, including the biological sciences, where the community prediction challenges are pretty much common. And also in other sciences, and also to solve the general problems, there are a lot of community platforms were established, specifically Kaggle, which is by Google, and the Dream Challenges, which is particularly for the biological challenges. So why there is need of these prediction challenges? Because they are quantitative and unbiased evaluation of model performance. They drive participants from all the background and make them strive for the accuracy and outperform their other participants, and they encourage a wide range of participants and contribute to a deeper understanding of topic in hand. And there are a lot of different obstacles in developing computational models in biological application, and specifically systems vaccinology studies. It's because if you see the system vaccinology studies, they are varying in system designs. They are very specific to the topic which they study, and data is generally multidimensional and heterogeneous. And there are a lot of parameters. They are in the range of thousands. Specifically, if you consider the assay like RNA-seq, and very few study participants are enrolled for those studies, so it makes the generalizability and the prediction performance of these models testing very hard as a problem. Then it's also needed for accountability of variability between the study subjects or individuals to ensure that whatever models people build, they are robust and accurate, and also these studies are mostly pre post, and also time points are involved while collecting these samples. So to capture temporal dynamics, it's pretty important for system vaccinology models. So to overcome these problems, we established CMIBB as a resource and a community platform to develop and test computational models in vaccinology and to understand vaccine induced immunity to bordetella pertussis. So today we are going to do a deep dive of CMIBB project, which we are running from last 5 years, and how we define CMIBB challenge or contest, and what kind of information is available, like the task, the data, and all other resources which we are providing through the website. We also wanna give a few examples of the example models which we established in past two challenges, and those are readily available for everyone of you to reuse and make your predictions better. And then we also talk about all the resources, a brief overview, and then we plan to hold a Q&A after that. So let's jump into the project overview. So oofing cup, which is caused by Bordetella pertussis, which is a gram-negative bacterium in upper respiratory tract, it causes short and long-term symptoms. Short-term symptoms include lower fever, runny nose, mild cough, and apnea in infants. And there are also long-term symptoms like coughing fits ending with the oof sound, and then the omitting and exhaustion, like these symptoms. And there is a prevention which is established by the DTP vaccination, which is given at the childhood, and also the booster vaccination is given. And epidemiology explains that there are wide the big number of deaths has been happened in the past, and also the disease is spread all across the globe. So if you see the caseload in US itself, the data is that I'm showing is from the CDC. So until 1994, the caseload is around 200 to 250,000 cases per year. And there was introduction of whole bacterium pertussis vaccine, which is WP, introduced in late 1940s. And that led to dramatically decrease in caseload. And by 1970, 1980, there was no resurgence of this disease. But around 1990, there was a concern about the reactogenicity of whole cell bacterium vaccine. That led to US government to decide the replacement of W vaccine with the acellular pertussis vaccine, and which was introduced in 1995. And after introduction of this vaccine, in first 10 years, the caseload was pretty much steady. But by 2005, the cases were started to increase again. And then that led to introduce a booster vaccination around that time, not just in the US, but all other countries. And after that also, you see the cases were increasing. And around 2013, it was declared as an epidemic in California specifically. So the waning immunity from APV pertussis vaccination is important to study and to compare with the old vaccine, which is a W vaccine. So To go over the our recruitment strategy, how we study this problem, I request my colleague Lisa to talk about the recruitment strategy and the data that we had.
Thank you, Pramod, and welcome everyone. So for the CMIPB project, we enrolled a total of 171 adults, and those adults were primed during infancy with either the AP or WP vaccine. When those donors were enrolled, they were eligible to get a Tdap booster vaccination, but before they got this booster vaccination, they donated blood at up to three different time points. And those time points formed our baselines, as you can see here. Then they got a Tdap booster vaccination, and after the booster vaccination, they donated blood at an additional five different time points, which form our post-Tdap booster vaccination time points. Then we used the blood and the plasma of these time points to perform different experiments. Next slide, please. Thank you. And here you can see an overview of those experiments. So one of them is, for instance, that we measured the immune cell frequencies of the blood using flow cytometry. So we measured a total of 37 distinct cell populations. And one of them is, for instance, the monocyte frequencies of the blood. Then the second one is the antigen-specific antibody measurements in the plasma. And we are using Olink to measure these. We are measuring the total IgG levels, but also the IgG subtypes. And all those IgGs are specific for the vaccine antigens. So these isotypes, they recognize, for instance, the pertussis toxoid as an antigen, but it can also be the non-pertussis vaccine antigens such as tetanus toxoid. Then a third assay that we are performing is the Olink and Legendplex, which are we are performing these to measure the cytokine concentrations in the plasma of 48 different cytokines. And one of them is, for instance, IL-6. Then the fourth assay is the bulk RNA sequencing of the PBMCs, and those form our transcriptomics data. And the last one, this one is actually a bonus and the first time that we are adding these data to the prediction challenge. So right now we are adding the antigen-specific T cell responses. So we performed AIM assay and FluoroSpot on all the donors. So for instance, for the AIM assay, we are measuring the percentage of CD4 positive T cells that are activated and are specific for the vaccine antigens. And then with the FluoroSpot, we are measuring the cytokine polarization. So we are measuring, for instance, interferon gamma as Th1 polarized cells and IL-5 for Th2 and IL-17 for Th17 cells. And with that, I would like to give the word back.
Thanks, Lisa. So all six assays for about 171 subjects. So this data is generated by CMIPB grant, and this data will be pushed into the central database alongside the, we also have data from externally funded experiments and a lot of information coming from the literature to map IDs, etc. So all this data we put together into the central database, which will be made available through the data APIs to CMIPB consortium's labs and on all the users who are participating for the contest. Now also, we are holding back the response data for the challenge data set, which is restricted and which will be released after the annual prediction challenge, which I'll be talking in detail shortly. So having this asset data is itself is having a lot of information, and to make it simple for contestants, we make a schema in a very standardized format so that data is consistently read, and we divide this schema into a subject and specimen information tables. Subject and specimen, there are information about the experimental data sets in all these seven data tables, and also we provide ID mapping information through the metadata information. For an example, we say here Ansible gene ID, and so the gene name and everything else can be fetched from the metadata tables. And all I'm not going in detail, but the schema information and the database information is provided on the website for the deep dive. So now, after having the database in very standardized format established, we open this data for the CMIBB challenge, and I'll be talking in detail about what components are there for the CMIBB challenge. So in total, we plan to do three challenges, and the third challenge, which is open for public, which consists of 117 study subjects coming from the past challenge combined together. 96 plus 21, that makes 117. And we have the new cohort of 54 study participants, which is set for the challenge data sets. And this challenge is open now. And there are a lot of different components, starting from the immune profiling data sets, which is divided into training and test data set or challenge data sets. And then we have task or questions to answer by the contestants. And then after having these question answered, we provide the submission format for submitting models. And then we evaluate these models. And at the end, we have prizes. I'll go over this all these components one by one. So this is a brief overview of data. So the entire 171 study subjects are divided into training and challenge data set. And for challenge data set, for training data sets, there are three independent cohorts, 2020, 21, and 22, which will be used for the building models. And for this training data set, we give both pre-vaccination information with three time points and then the post-vaccination information by 4 to 5 time points. That includes the outcome or the ground truth. And we also provide the demographic information about these subjects, participants are welcome to design their own features by doing the feature engineering. And the challenge data sets, which include one cohort of 54 participants, and for which we just provide the pre-vaccination information, and the post-vaccination information or response data is hidden from the participants, which will be released for the model evaluation at the end of the contest. As I've just said, the data set includes the training and test, and for the training and test in total, we have the four different cohorts. So there is a natural question about how do we create computable matrices which are suitable for the model development. So it is essential to do the data processing and the normalization before going this data into the specific models. So these data processing and normalization approaches are very specific for the users with their expertise, but learning from the past two challenges, CMIBB team is also providing the standardized data for contestants who might not have the expertise in data normalization, where these computable matrices can be directly used and models can be developed. So the entire data is provided into three different formats. The first one is raw experimental data, which is coming directly from the experiments, which is very close to experimental we run. Then the second one, which is the harmonized data, it is exact same data. It's just that for all four cohorts, we have the exact number of the features, so that it's easy for the data imputations and for the data processing. The next one, which is the process data, which we also termed as a batch corrected data, which I'll be explaining in a moment. So where do you find this data? So you go to the CMIBB website, cmibb.org, and if you go to the prediction challenge, you click here, then yeah, there's a lot of information which Shelby will be covering in a moment. I'll directly jump into data and resources. So here you see the information about study design and data sets is explained. And then we have information about the training and challenge data set. Then we say here where the raw data sets are available. I'll be going into STP site in a moment. And also we provide the information of the harmonized and processed data sets. I'll go into the GitHub repo, which we created. Where we explain as a step one of data harmonization, what we exactly did. So we standardize data for the different formats to ensure the consistency of features, names, and sample identifiers. And we also do the feature mapping across all four data sets. Then in the second step, where we create the process data, where we do data normalization, imputation, and batch weight corrections step by step. And all this information is provided as a R code in here. Now, the natural question is, like how to discriminate or what information does this pipeline gives. So for an example, I'll give you an example of the cell frequency analysis. So you see, so there are clear batch effects of all four data sets. When you see the PCA plot and also on the PVCA variance explained plot, you see data set has the clear 90% of explained variance and the actual signal is somehow hidden, and how to get back this signal and make data more informable. So for this purpose, we do data normalization. And when you do that, you see the expected signal is jumped up and the data set signal is went down, and all four data sets are pretty much consistent. And after batch correction, the data is even better now. So all this information is available on the website. Back one more time. Here, and if you go to the STPP side for the third challenge, the raw data sets are made available through the training and challenge data sets in individual files. And if you go to the harmonized and processed data sets, there are two kind of data sets. The first one is the harmonized data, which is available as RDS file for the R user. And if people are using other programming languages, data sets are also made available in TSV files in here. Similarly, for the batch effect corrected data, RDS file is available, and also we make the TSV files. Now, after having access to this data, we provided tasks, which are basically the questions which we found from our previous publications. And where we identified three kind of tasks. First one is related to general vaccine responses, where we find that plasma IgG levels were increased post booster vaccination against pertussis toxin on day 14. So we ask you to predict this response. The actual task questions I'll be reading in a moment. The second interesting general vaccine response which you identified is the monocyte frequency increase on day one post booster vaccination. And also, we also have the third task, which is very specific to bordetella pertussis vaccination, where some of the AP prime individuals showed the increased expression on day three for the pro-inflammatory genes. And here we form tasks by asking CCL3 gene expression prediction. So this task come into three groups, 1, 2, 3. I'll give example of antibody titer task, where the first task where we ask to rank individuals or study participants by IgG antibody titers against the pertussis toxin that we detect in plasma day 14 post booster vaccination, where the ranking should be done on the predicted values. Then the second task, which is exact similar, is just that participants needs to calculate the fold change values, and then those on the basis of those fold change values, the rank should be calculated. I'll be giving example in a moment. So the idea is to have to model as many as tasks possible, but however, contestants are not required to submit all the tasks. Even if they submit one or a few, that should be sufficient. So this is how you do ranking. So you have the subject ID, and then the baseline values are provided for the challenge data sets. You will predict the post-vaccination response, let's say for day 14, and those are here. Then you calculate the fold change values using the baseline and the post-vaccine values. And then using the post-vaccination prediction values, you calculate the ranks. And using the fold change values, you calculate the fold change-based ranks. And then you submit this ranking on the CMIPP website. So the example file looks like this. So if the submission involves all the tasks completed, so you have a ranking looks something like this. If it contains only two tasks answered. So yeah, for example, 1.1 and 3.1 is answered. So we ask you to fill in those columns and leave blank all other columns. Yeah, and after you submit your prediction or submission files in this format, which is TSV file, we compile all the submission files and do the Spearman correlation coefficient calculation as a first scoring step, where after you submit the predicted ranks, we see if there are any blank cells or the NA values put in there. Sometimes people discard some of the subjects because they are not following some trend. So that end up in NA. So yeah, we replace those NAs with the median rank of the submitted files. And using this modified or imputed file, we calculate the Spearman correlation between the predicted and the actual ranks, which is hidden. Then as a second step, we design a point system where if you are a task winner, so we are giving the 8 points. If you are standing between the 98% confidence interval, we assign 6 points. And if your Spearman correlation coefficient is significant, we give 1 point. So for each task, there are maximum 8 points will be given. And for all six tasks, maximum 48 points will be given. And this is the simple example where we identify the winners. So after giving the individual points as per models predicted the all the tasks, we calculate or we sum all the ranking points, which we term as the final points, and the winner, which has the maximum points, which is the first winner, and then the second and third winner will be calculated. And all these details are available on the website. And after identifying winners, we have prizes and the awards given to the participants, which are very similar to the second challenge, where all the submitters will at least one significant Spearman correlation coefficient will be acknowledged as the co-authors in the manuscript, which will be written following the challenge. Also, we have the monetary prizes of total 5,000, where first, second, and third place is identified and awarded accordingly. And the details about these prizes is also available on the website. And this is a sneak peek. Yeah, so far we talk about different components of the website, and the summary looks like this. We have the data generated by experiments by Lisa and her team. And this data is divided into training and the challenge data sets, where in training data set, we provide both pre and post vaccination information. For the challenge data set, which will be used for the prediction purposes, we only provide the pre-vaccination information, post-vaccination information is hidden. Then we have three tasks or three group of tasks or six tasks, which participants will be answered, and they will submit the ranking files. And after that, we score them and announce winners towards the end of the challenge. And now I'll be going over some of the example models which we identified from past two challenges. So this is the manuscript coming from the first internal challenge, where only CMI PB consortium members were participated. And we first team which identified the models from the literature, and then the two teams which established multiomics data integration based models using Jive and the multiple coinsertion analysis or MCIA. And yeah, and this is one of the good source to refer. The link of paper is also provided here, which will be passing you after this presentation. Then from the second challenge, we submitted this manuscript into BioArchive, and it's under screening, where there are around 25 new models in addition to 32 models which we identified in the first challenge, where also a given, where we also have methods from individual participants. And just to say that all the teams which participate in the second challenge are awarded in the authorship listed here. So I'll be briefly talking about the winning model from the second challenge and how it looks like broadly. But I would also recommend to go over this manuscript and the GitHub repo, where we have listed all 50 plus models with their codes and how they perform, etc. as a resource. So the winning model from the second challenge looks like this, so which is divided into three distinct components. This is from the University of Minnesota group, and they did the dimension reduction through different steps of data processing and also linear mixed effect models, which they use towards the end. So they take raw experimental data as it is from the website. They first identified the common features similar to the data processing pipeline that we provided. Then they do the time points based batch effect correction and the data imputation of mixing both training and challenge data set. And after that, they have this imputed data. And after this, they go for the dimension reduction model testing, which they do for Lasso, Ridge, PLS, PCI, and the MCI. And at the end, out of this five, they identify MCI outperforms others, which they choose as the final model for downstream analysis. And they take MCI, they generate 10 factors, and global scores are further used for the linear mixed effect models. And there they divide their training data in the MCI factors constructed on the training data in the training and test data set, and they do five-fold cross-validation and they evaluate data model on the test data sets, and they identify a best performing model which they take as a final model for doing the prediction on the challenge data set. And after having this prediction, they submit their ranks on the same website. Yeah, so this model is extensively being talked in the manuscript, which will be coming soon. And yeah, and also if you want to do the deep dive, we also had the DeepRib session after the second challenge, where all top three winners presented their results. And this is exciting resource to listen in and get more information about their models. Yeah, with this, I pass on to Shelby to talk about all of the resources that we provided through CMIPB website.
Thanks, Pramod. Hi, everyone. Can we go to the next slide, please? So here is an overview of the resources that are currently on the CMIPB website. And I won't go through this in too much detail, but these slides will be posted on the website after this meeting so that you are able to access the resources from each of these links here. But I particularly want to highlight the Solution Center, which is in the bottom right-hand corner. Next slide, please. Here's an overview of the Solution Center, and specifically for the third challenge, you can see it highlighted in purple here. So we encourage that participants ask questions on the Solution Center, and the reason for this is so that it's accessible to all of the participants in case someone has the same question as you. Also on the Solution Center, we will be posting the meeting recordings and slides, as well as any relevant announcements here. Next slide, please. So in order to post on the Solution Center, you'll need to make an account, and you can do so by going to the website and clicking the Sign In to CMIPB button in the upper right-hand corner here. You'll be guided through some prompts to create an account, and then you can confirm that you're logged in by seeing your email in the upper right-hand corner. As you can see here, you will also need to make an account to submit your prediction as well. Next slide, please. And this is just a brief overview of submitting a prediction. We'll go into some more details in the future informational sessions, but from the homepage, you'll be able to submit your prediction once you are logged in by clicking the Submit Prediction button in the upper right-hand corner. And from there, you'll be taken to the submissions page where you can upload your file and submit directly from there. Next slide, please. Awesome. And I'll hand it over to Mari to explain a little more about the timeline and the CMIPB team before we go into some questions.
Thanks, Shelby. Today we had our first informational session. We wanted to let you know that we have two more coming up. So on October 8th, we'll have our second informational session. And then on November 14th, we'll have, the informational session is October 4th. And then November 8th, we'll have our third informational session. So what I was hinting at right now, following each informational session, we'll have office hours. So our first one is coming up on September 9th, and we'll be sending more information for that as well. And during these sessions, you can just hop in and out and ask individual questions about your models, or if you're confused about anything, use this time as like a one-on-one session so you can ask questions to Pramod or any of us. And then we'll have two more as well on October 8th and November 14th. And then following that, our final submission due date is on November 22nd. So you have less than 3 months to submit your models. And then on December 6th, we'll be announcing winners and releasing the longitudinal test data. Awesome. Next slide, please. And with that, we just wanted to thank everyone that's been involved throughout this whole process. It wasn't just those of us who presented today. This was a huge feat involving people from the Kleinstein Lab here at Yale, and then Grant's Lab at UCSD, A Lab at LJI, and also the Peters Lab also at LJI. So yeah, next slide. And yeah, these are some of the current members who are working on the project. So we also wanted to thank everyone that's been involved. And with that, we'd love to have questions. So next slide. If you could raise your hand using the Zoom function, I'll call your name out. And if you can unmute and ask a question, that'd be fantastic.
So and actually following up on that, I mean, we've done this before, and the problem is always at this first session, I mean, people are just getting started. So there is no such thing as a wrong or a stupid question. Definitely. I mean, people always say this, but in this time, it really is true. And the problem is always that at the very end, that's when all the questions come up. So we've been trying to stagger these sessions to make sure that people can at any time point get information. So, yeah. So I would very much encourage people to ask stuff now and again like this. Marcus, go ahead.
Hello. Hello, everyone. So my first question is, can I submit more than one model? And if I can submit more than one model, how it's going to be evaluated? Is going to be the, all of them is going to be evaluated or just the last one? Because the last time you could submit like three models, but only the last one will be evaluated. So this is going to be the same way that was before, or you're going to change it?
Thanks, Marcus, for the nice question. So there are two parts of it. So the first part is in like each team can submit different models. So there is no restriction on, there are no restriction on the number of model submitted or different kinds of models submitted. So let's say the entire team is divided and submitting like three different models, model one, model two, and model three. So these are the independent models which are submitted. Now, the second part of the question is, when you submit the model one, so what happens? Like before the due date, before the challenge date, 1 month before you submit the model, and that's what is like deposited in our records. Now you thought like that there is some improvement, and you want to submit the second model or the second model for the first model, and likewise. So whatever you model you submit before the deadline, which will be considered for the final evaluation. But as a team, you can submit the different kinds of models. I hope that that answers your question.
Yes, thank you.
Next, I saw Barry raise his hand.
Thank you. So the harmonized data seems really useful and a great starting point. I was wondering from the last challenge if those winners, they seem to do their own thing, right? Their own processing step. If they used the harmonized data, would they still have won? Is there differences, or was your harmonization inspired by that? What would you recommend?
We would encourage people to use the harmonized data in a sense to understand how the harmonization and pre-processing is being done. And use the code and the resources that we provide, but it's not. I wouldn't say like you cannot win or you could win using this data. So it's up to contestants' choice, like what exact data they want to use. But we provided these data sets and the code as a resource.
I think the question is somewhat differently. So I think Barry is pointing out that there might be an advantage to not use it and do your own pre-processing. Eric can correct me. But clearly, I mean, we are not going to punish anyone. No. Anybody obviously can use the pre-processed data, but there might be good reasons to do it differently. And that was one of the reasons why some of the people won in the past. So don't just take it. And that's one of the things we would like to learn, right? If there's a better methods for pre-processing, that would be fantastic to figure out.
Thank you, Barry. Next, I had Mahida, I think, raised her hand.
Hi. So I had two questions. The first question is similar to Marcus. So I just wanted to confirm that in the final Python language submit the models, can we submit as many number of models per task? Can we submit only a limited number of models per task?
I think you can submit like a number of multiple models per task. It's just that you need to put all your models for individual tasks in, as a one submission file, because that is what is being evaluated as a together through the point system, and then the winners are announced. But yeah, you're welcome to submit as many number of models you want.
Thank you. Thank you. And the other question that I addressed about the battery, the producing battery, the battery that causes producing, is it prevalent, equally prevalent all over the world? Is it more prevalent in some parts of the world?
So I can take this, or Lisa can correct me then. So it is actually prevalent throughout the world quite equally, and it's actually found pretty much everywhere. It's just, and very often, like when you even do like sequencing of microbiomes in the lung, you'll find it. But the people who get infected, typically, I mean, obviously that is this colonization and infection, right? So that happens primarily to infants, at least where it's really dangerous. The long answer is it is prevalent everywhere. And that's pretty much it. Sorry, I didn't do a good job with this one.
Thank you for that.
Thanks, Mahida. Next, Sunayana, if you can unmute yourself and ask your question.
Hi. Bringing back the question regarding what would be the correct choice to use what data, just a curiosity, depending upon which raw or processed data we use, but we are going to be assessed on the final answers that you guys have, values that you guys have already obtained, I believe. So are your values biased to any specific data set that you use that might make any difference?
So this is one of the reasons why we're using ranking as a method for evaluating the performance, right? So all these processing methods typically do not change. None of them changes the rankings of stuff. So you might have, you'll have a reconfiguration of what is high, like the absolute values, but what is the highest value versus the lowest value is always going to be the same for the variables that we're looking for in the readouts. So I hope that makes some sense. So
okay, thank you.
Thank you. Next, I have Lane.
Okay, sorry, I have a very silly question. So if I understand, can you confirm that is any batch corrections even needed on the test data? So for example, if your test data is from the same batch in the future, so you don't apply any other batch correction to them, in which case, I guess, whatever batch effect you're applying to the training data is only for the robust training and won't affect the test performance. Is this correct?
Yeah. So there are two, I think, insights of this question. The first one is we're taking pre and post vaccination information data from the training data, all three cohorts, and only the pre-vaccination data, which is the challenge data in batch effect correction pipeline, which is just to make sure all data sets are consistent for the model building. But the hidden data set, which is a challenge data set, is completely out of this batch effect correction pipeline.
Okay, that's really cool. So I guess no additional batch correction was applied to that hidden challenge data set. Okay, great, thanks.
Thanks, Ling. Next, I have Jian.
Thank you. I have a question specifically for the data itself. For the antibody titers, I saw there were not only one isotype, there's several isotypes in there. When we consider about the antibody response level, do you have any suggestions if we should focus on only, for example, the IgG1 antibody levels, or we should be better to average the antibody levels for all the isotypes?
Since we measure them all separately, so the IgG1, 2, 3, and 4, I would advise you to try to build a model with all those different measurements. We also have the total IgG, so that might cover your kind of average measurement when you're building a model. I hope that answers.
Yeah, so the total IgG, should, is that like you measure all the isotypes together for the level?
Yeah, that's correct. Yes, but these are all antigen specific. And Bjorn can elaborate on this.
Yeah, no, that's Pramod, what is the prediction task?
I believe
that it's total IgG, right? Yeah. So, and that ultimately, Jian, we would love to have a model that can separately predict the different isotypes.
Mm-hmm.
But with the current state, I mean, we found in the past contest that if you make it more complex and ask for these things, it just confuses everyone. So right now, the only thing that needs to be predicted is total IgG. Now, at the same time, you're going to have all these other data. And I think immunologically, it would be super exciting to say, okay, you can find who's going to be high in IgG4 versus IgG1. So, but essentially, it's taken outside the context. We make all the data available so you can, if those are questions that you are interested in immunologically, which are super exciting, go for it. But for the contest, it's a separate measurement. So the total IgG is not like a sum. It's a Lisa, can you come confirm? So it's essentially a separate type of assay that just has like a general. Okay, yeah.
John, did that answer your question?
Why I asked this is because I want to, because the prediction models I'm thinking is because I used the some measurement for the older version of the data, and it doesn't really look good to predict the IgG, like the actually total IgG level. So that's why I'm thinking of if we could do this prediction for the individual isotypes them. So yeah, we definitely want to try with the newer, the data, see what happened in there. Thank you.
Cool, good luck.
Awesome, thank you. And then next we have Eve.
Hi, are there any sort of limitations on the originality, or the simplicity of the models that we submit relative to last year?
Absolutely not. Please duplicate yourself. I mean, no. That would be the best, right? If you performed well last time and you submit the same one, absolutely, there's no need for originality. There's a need for performing well.
Thanks, Eve. And then Julie.
Hi. I have a question regarding the baseline data. Because you said there's like three measurements, but we are given only one baseline data. So if yes, how is it calculated?
I think, yeah, your question is about how many baseline values we are giving for training and test data set.
Yes,
So
do you give them individually or do you give only one?
we are giving all three baseline data
Okay,
for,
and then we decide how we want to use them.
yeah, whether you want to like take a median or the best way you think is.
Okay, and how did people do last time? Maybe you mentioned that already.
Yeah, I can see most people took day zero directly, and wherever they find there are like missing values, where there they took the help from the other baselines. So that was one method which I've seen, yeah, most of the time.
Okay, thank you.
But actually, this is something we should maybe also have a separate post about on the forum, Pramod. I mean, the old data, which the original training data didn't have multiple baselines. And so at some point that has made it hard to kind of like take the new ones, and how to deal with multiple baselines has is actually another interesting question that, yeah, I mean, I'm hoping we can find out a good way of how to do it.
Thanks, Julie. Mahida, I see a hand.
Yeah, that regard with the baseline data, I remember that I remember that whatever value done prefer Peter are grouped together into day zero. Is that right?
Yeah, the
So,
like the
Pramod, can you please repeat the question? Because I'm also not sure if I completely got it.
I think
And make sure, yeah.
I understood that all three pre-vaccination baseline, are they put together at day zero? I think is this is the question, right, Mehta?
Yes.
Okay, so like we provide data for day zero, day minus 14, which is calculated from the day of vaccination, and minus day 30 or 31. And we provide like sample labeling and the day pre day related to the vaccination as a concrete measurements. Then it's up to you, like whether you want to pick just day zero or you want to do the average or whatever best way you think is to consider as a baseline for your models for prediction purposes.
Thank you.
I hope you answered your question. Otherwise, yeah, we can always meet during the open house session, which is coming next Monday, to discuss more.
So,
thanks, Mahita. Any other last questions?
No, I don't have any other questions.
You have another question?
No. No other questions. I think we can
Oh,
stop
no.
it here.
Yeah, Pramod, if you can go
So,
to the next slide. Yeah, so again, we'll have our office hour session on Monday. So if you can feel free to drop by and we'll send out the Zoom information as well, but it's also available in the Solution Center. So yeah, thank you all for joining today, and we look forward to seeing your submissions. So thank you, everyone.
Thank you, folks. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.